Welcome everyone, and thank you for joining us for Lifetime Adoption's webinar for adoptive parents. Tonight is our Q&A or question and answer session for prospective adoptive parents, parents who are in the planning stages, adoptive parents who are currently waiting on a match or walking through a match pretty much at any stage of your adoption planning. We're here to answer questions for you about how things work here at Lifetime and in adoption in general. My name is Kim King, and I am co-hosting with Libby Murray, and we are two of Lifetime's adoptive family coordinators who assist families during these webinars. And thank you for being with us. I just want to run by some contact information for people who may be brand new to exploring things with Lifetime, and maybe this is your first time on a webinar with us. I would encourage you, or I do encourage you, to visit us on Facebook and go ahead and type in facebook.com/open.adoption, and that's facebook.com/open.adoption. Be sure to follow us on there and be sure to browse through some of the conversations that we have. There are all kinds of people within the adoption community on our Facebook page, so it is a great support. And we are actively involved on in Facebook on a regular basis. So you can always stay in touch day to day with us on Facebook. If you are brand new to Lifetime and haven't filled out an application yet, then I would encourage you to do that this evening as well. The website for the application or the direct link is lifetimeadoption.com/apply. So if you just open your browser and type in lifetimeadoption.com/apply, that will take you directly to the start page of our application. And you know, take a gander through some of the questions. They shouldn't be anything too complicated. It asks you a few questions about yourself as well as what you're looking for in your adoption. We know that nothing is set in stone when you're first exploring things, so it's more of a conversation opener with us so that we can learn more about you and understand where things sit and what's leading you to adoption, what some of your needs are. That way when you have questions or we want to offer tips and advice, then we kind of have a basis for some of the needs and characteristics that are going on in your circumstances. Anyway, another way you can reach us is by phone, 1-800-923-6784. That's 1-800-923-6784. Many of our families know that that is our birth mom hotline, but it is also an adoption answer line. And if you are an adoptive family, we will receive phone calls from adoptive parents on that line from 8 to 5, Monday through Friday, 8 to 5 Pacific time. Other than that, we man that hotline 24/7 for birth mom support, as well as for families who are currently walking through active adoptions with a birth mom that they're traveling to or waiting on clearance to come back from the baby's birth state, etc. So if you have any questions and would rather email us, please email apply@lifetimeadoption.com. If you're joining us on the webinar format online, then you can see where we've posted our email addresses. Libby's is libby@lifetimeadoption.com, and mine is just kim@lifetimeadoption.com. You are welcome to send over any questions directly to us. If you already have a coordinator, then of course you would want to reach out to your coordinator or social worker for any questions or updates to your circumstances. So Libby, take it away.
Well, you already covered so much, Kim.
I know. I feel like I was just having a talkathon there.
That's okay. It's good. They're probably happy to hear me take a break from speaking. But I just want to encourage everyone, just remember, one of the reasons we love our adoption Q&As is because we don't know what topics we're going to get to cover. And it really is about what's on your mind. And we'll do our best to give you some direction, some clarity. And I'm just glad to see all of you here. I cannot believe it's the end of April and that we're well into spring and looking at wrapping up school years and another season and everything. I know that this time of year, a lot of people start thinking, okay, I thought I was going to start adoption by now. Maybe I need to look into this more, or maybe you're already waiting to adopt and you're thinking, gosh, this year is flying, and I was really hoping to have different progress by now. And webinars are a great way to just connect. Kim and I were so blessed to read just today some feedback from a woman. This is speaking especially to the fact, like Kim was saying, that when you apply with Lifetime, when you inquire, you are beginning a conversation, and it's not obligating you to work with us. It's not even obligating you to adopt. And one of the reasons we love webinars is because we know that there are a lot of you who have attended webinars long before you even let Lifetime know who you were and what your goals were. But also because you tune in, you get answers, you go step by step. And the response we had this morning was, I've been listening to webinars for a year, and they are so helpful to us. And we just love hearing that, because we know that not all of you will chime in, but we know that all of you and your questions and comments have helped each other, and that's really what we want to encourage. So we do have one question here popped up, Kim, that I would love to start with tonight. How much guidance do you provide around the legal aspects of adoption?
Okay, well, once you are matched with a birth mom, then we will make a referral to the appropriate person who can come into the picture. Basically, they become part of your team that is walking you through each step of your adoption. Now, their only focus is on the legal work as Lifetime continues to guide you and birth mom through to the successful adoption. I think the word would be in tandem with the attorney or whomever is doing the legal work. Since we work with birth moms and families all across the country, then we just, you know, it's important to have someone who's licensed in the state that pertains to your adoption. So for you, it may be someone that is from your state doing the legal work, or it may be someone from the birth mom state. You know, you'll have options depending on where the birth mom is and the different state requirements at that time. Now, we can give basic examples or basic guidelines early on, just to kind of give you an expectation of kind of like the scope of how things typically work in private adoption in general. But we won't be able to get into any specifics that you know for sure, okay, this is how it's going to go, until you have the match and retain legal services, or at least have an attorney that is licensed in the state involved with your adoption. Because, you know, every state has different adoption laws nationwide. There are no two states whose adoption laws are identical. And adoption law is very quickly changing. So what we may know about, you know, a certain state, for example, Maryland right now, may change 6 months from now or 3 months from now, as well as different sort of like practices within different states. Sometimes there are different interpretations of how different laws are going to be play out in your adoption, depending on what the judges at the time or in different counties are accepting or not accepting. So we have to just wait until we know where the birth mom is, and then we'll make the appropriate referral at that time. And we can kind of give you an idea of what we know about that state so far once you are matched, but we won't be able to give legal advice or, you know, legal information. It'll be from the person who's licensed to, you know, they are the subject matter expert and can, you know, show you how things are going to go in your specific adoption. So because of how wide open the options are for any of our Lifetime families, we just recommend not retaining any legal services until you have a match and your coordinator or social worker has said, yes, now you need to retain legal services. At that time, we will definitely provide you a referral. Some of our families who are on the call tonight can attest to how valuable those referrals are, because winging it out there on your own, trying to find someone, you may come across a very frustrating experience because they may not really be up on how adoptions work with Lifetime, or maybe they don't have experience with Lifetime, so they're not really people that we refer to. So let's see, there was a second part to your question. So there could be two people representing? Yes, that's correct. It's possible that you might have two attorneys in your adoption, perhaps one from your state and one from her state. Or another scenario is that her state might require you to hire two attorneys in her state, one for her paperwork and one for your paperwork, but you are basically hiring both as the adoption, you know, as the adoptive parent. Another scenario is that it could just be one attorney in her state or one attorney in your state. Another scenario is that it might not be an attorney at all. It might be an agency doing the legal work. Different states have different requirements. Some will not allow just an attorney to do the legal work. Some will require you to hire an agency in that state to do the legal work. So the agency in that state is hired only to focus on the legal services involved, such as termination of parental rights, any legal counsel that needs to be provided for birth mom, the process of the paperwork for getting baby's clearance to go across state lines with you. So just different states have different requirements. So those are basically all the scenarios I can think of as to how it will go, but because
well,
we wouldn't want
you
to,
just...
go ahead.
I was just going to add, too, that sometimes it's case by case, too. What worked for one adoption and all the circumstances involved, we may apply, not so much that we're just, you know, winging it and making a different process, but that what applies to one sometimes takes into consideration, I mean, all of our advice, all of our recommendations and referrals take into consideration the whole picture, first father, first mother, the circumstances surrounding her pregnancy, if she's already had involvement maybe with child protective services before, or if she's new to the area but she was originally from another state, or if she's living there temporarily, all the way over to your other side too, which would it benefit your adoption if you went with your state laws or with the state laws where your baby will be born? There's so much that comes into play. And so sometimes I've worked with families that have said, oh, yeah, I retained an attorney long ago. It really can narrow them down if they insist on using the help they already retained, because that may not always apply to the scenario they are presented, to the opportunity they move forward with. So this is a big part, and I love when these questions come up because it allows us to go back to the way that Lifetime is structured is not to say, here's an opportunity, good luck. It's really to say, here's an opportunity that we've already gotten to learn a lot about. We're going to share with you everything we know and then continue learning more together moving forward. And so one of the things that's great about working with a program like ours is that you have a lot of different partners all contributing towards the safety and success of moving your adoption match forward. Also advocating for the birth mother, too, which helps her feel more secure, supported, and able to make a confident decision in you.
You know what? That brings up another, I remember a case, I think within the last 6 months, where the birth mom, she already had an attorney picked out that she felt a trust with. And so when she was going to choose a family, it had to be someone who would agree to hire him, you know. So that's also another curveball that could come your way.
right.
You just never know. So, and another thing to keep in mind, too, as to why you may not want to retain legal services or why you shouldn't until you have a match, well, over half of the states allow you to finalize and do everything in birth mom state. And once you know what state she's from and get a chance to ask a few questions about that state, you might really like the simplicity of that. You know, the option may be obvious to you at that time. So no matter what state you're matched with, or, you know, what the parameters or different things, you know, that, you know, may be involved with your adoption, we will walk you through it and provide our referral. We have a tight-knit group of referrals nationwide. I mean, for California alone, I can think of like three different recommendations we would make for, you know, an attorney or an agency, or depending on what's involved in the case, you know. So just within the last year, I can think of three different scenarios that called for different types of referrals. So we'll specialize it and customize it directly, specifically for your circumstances.
Plus, sometimes the other curveballs can have to do with this next question, too, but You know, if your baby's born on a holiday last minute, and that's the first you ever heard about this opportunity to adopt, sometimes you may have to work with someone that is available. And that's a
Right.
big part of what Lifetime's doing too, is we're not only trying to find you the right help, but we're trying to find you the right help who can be ready for you, and help things move along. So it's good to have options too, because between you and the birth mother and attorneys and us, you know, there's all kinds of personalities involved and different needs, person to person, communication wise, emotionally. And so we really try and just take it all into consideration and get you the best guidance forward. But this other question, Kim, it says, what types of things can happen that would cause you to have a stay in the state of where the baby was born for an extended period of time? And I think you started to touch on that, because really this can vary too. I love going back to even referencing last week's webinar with Ryan and Laura. They shared their longer than average time out of state with their newborn baby was 4 weeks. Usually we say it's only 1 to 2 weeks because that's an average. That's a usually everything falls within that period of time, maybe closer to 7 to 10 days even. But sometimes things take a little longer. There can be holidays that fall in. There can be sometimes even just weather upsets. You know, if your attorney just simply cannot go meet with a birth mother because the roads are horrible and they can't follow through with an appointment, you know, sometimes there's some out of your control things that come in the way. Other things, like we didn't get into it real deep last week, but I know with the story we heard last week and sometimes with others, a birth mother may not always feel ready. It's not that she's changed her mind, but sometimes something may come up that maybe she's just having a hard time between work and her other kids, or just the emotional stress of what she's moving through to follow through with appointments. And so sometimes that can prolong getting the signatures and the paperwork in order to get you clearance to go home. Other times there are things on the other side, like I've worked with families where their home study may not have been completely updated or something may have been lapsed. And they may have to be working by phone or internet or even flying back and forth just one at a time to get items in order so that they can get clearance from baby's birth state to leave with the baby and go home to the other state. And I loved, Kim, it was so awesome. A couple months ago we hosted the webinar all about home studies, and we had Linda on, and I remember her talking about what the ICPC process really means is that these states are basically communicating basically authority to allow this baby to go from one state to another, and essentially approving the adoption. And I can't say that there's ever been a time with Lifetime, I can't think of any story when a state has said, no, you can't bring that baby into this state, because,
right.
You know, we're working with private adoption. I would say there are probably times with foster care where limitations may say, not yet, you know, there's too many things pending, we need to wait before something out of state can happen.
For example, if it's a foster child who has, you know, some special needs and is going to be receiving state assistance for their therapies or surgeries, et cetera, well, when the new state is receiving that child, they're accepting that in and saying, we have the budget to cover these services for this child. But you
yes.
don't normally see things like that with our newborn private adoptions.
No.
Well, you just don't see things like that.
But, you know, the key is, and I love that Ryan and Laura spoke to this so candidly last week on the webinar, and that recording will be up on adoptionteleconference.com this week. But, you know, they really struck a balance between being as prepared as possible but also staying flexible.
Mm-hmm.
And that we will do everything possible to help you avoid delays, but sometimes delays are out of our control. Like,
mm-hmm.
in their story, there was no way we could have even anticipated the things that came to be that kept them out of state longer than expected. But they made the most of it. They had never traveled to California before, where she was born, and they saw some things and just tried to enjoy their first holiday together there, and they knew that it was going to be temporary, that they would get home, and they just... they did the best that they could, and meanwhile, there were still a lot of wheels in motion, the attorney, the social workers, Lifetime. Everybody was working to get things moving so that they could get home to their familiar surroundings and begin settling in with baby. But most of the time, things go sort of average as planned, and families are home usually within a couple weeks of baby's birth.
Mm-hmm. And what we're talking about here is intrastate adoption. This might seem obvious to many of our listeners, but for families who are new to the concept of adoption and, you know, how it works with a program like Lifetime, where we work with families and birth moms from all over the U.S., so, you know, if there are two states involved, then that is considered an interstate adoption. And since all states have different laws, they have to both states get a chance to review all the paperwork and the home study of the family, make sure everything's, you know, on the up and up, and that if their laws pertain to this adoption, nothing has been broken, you know, and then they give the clearance. It's usually a pretty seamless process for most families, and you need clearance from the state where the baby is born and clearance from the state where the baby is traveling to. So, and usually they happen within 1 to 2 days of each other. And so you're just like staying in a hotel or a residence suite or something like that. Or if you have friends in that state where the baby is born, you can stay with them if you want. You just can't have the baby travel across state lines until the baby has clearance. If you are, you know, a couple that maybe one has to get back for something like other children or work things that you can't get out of, that's fine too. Only the baby needs the clearance, so either of you can come and go as you need to, which hopefully you'll be able to both just stay there, because you'll want to be there supporting each other with a newborn in a strange place. But, you know, interstate adoption is what we do on a regular basis all the time. Almost all of our adoptions are interstate. And because we don't place any outside regional restrictions on whom a birth mom can choose for her baby, that allows us to really work toward matches that fit within the characteristics that you know for sure you're looking for in your adoption, and not be limited by something as arbitrary as geographic location. Because the travel to that state is only 1 or 2 weeks, maybe. But, you know, other aspects like the health of the child, things like that, you know, that's a lifelong thing. So, you know, we allow you to focus more on what you're really looking for in a baby, and pursue that match for you, and allow a birth mom to really look for the family she would like for her child, and for that to be a mutual match without Lifetime putting any unnecessary legal or regional restrictions on it. And there are many places that, like other adoption professionals or attorneys, that are very, like, they don't want to deal with interstate adoptions, or it's just not something they have experience with. So, of course, they're fearful of it, but we're not fearful of it at all, because it's like our everyday business is interstate adoptions. It's pretty surprising for us if it's not an interstate adoption, actually.
Yes, well, and that's such a good point, because a good follow-up question that I saw was, what if you adopt a baby within your own state? Can we go back home? And the answer is yes, as long as you don't leave state lines. Because what happens is you can risk compromising and actually making things take longer. I had a family once, you know, because it's pretty easy, especially between Nevada and California, since they share a pretty long border, to weave in and out of that. And we did have a family one time, it's been several years now, but I remember that they did get caught coming over into California. They weren't anywhere near their home, but they just decided, let's go for a little day trip. And the attorney warned them, you better get back in Nevada. you know, because they didn't want to compromise anything. And so you just got to honor that stuff. But if it's within your state, another awesome tip that came up, I remember this was a great question last week, and we didn't really get to talk about it in the midst of the story that was going on. But for instance, yes, residence inns, extended stay hotels are really helpful because they have kitchens, sometimes even a separate bedroom, so you can have a little quiet time for baby and still be in a living area. But you may also know someone who lives in the state where your birth mother gives birth. And even if they don't live in the town where your baby was born, it's okay to even go stay with loved ones as long as you're in the state. The advice I always add to that is to take into consideration your birth mother's feelings and the relationship you've already begun. For instance, you don't want to act like, all right, the baby's here, check you later, we're going to go stay with my aunt Glenda, she's 4 hours away. And birth mother's thinking, okay, I just feel used. So,
or she may have been thinking, I'm not emotionally ready for the knowledge that they've left the town where we all are right now, you know.
Or she might be thinking, gosh, I look horrible in my hospital gown with bloodstained everything, and I'm sweaty, no makeup, my hair is gross. I was kind of hoping to get together once I was out and had an actual shower and could wear real shoes. So you may want to be sensitive to just allowing time, but that doesn't mean the whole time you have to stay in that area, especially in circumstances where maybe your baby was born in an area that's not as desirable to stay in, or maybe it's very expensive to stay in. Sometimes it's okay to think about options outside of that area once your baby's discharged from the hospital. But if you have an open connection already, a friendship already blossoming with your child's birth mom, it's easy to have a conversation to just say, oh my gosh, we're so excited because my mom's aunt lives 2 hours away and she said we could stay with her. She has a little guest room for us and even a separate little granny kitchen. It'll be easy for us to wait out. But to also say, but, you know, if you want us to stick around for a couple days to have dinner, or if you want us to come back before we leave and arrange another get-together, you know, we'll be happy to coordinate that too, because most families find that they really enjoy the opportunities they get to spend with their baby's birth mom around that time of the birth. And many birth moms don't expect a lot of time, and they don't even want a lot of time. So you may find that you're actually on the side of, well, we were only able to get together once after because she was so busy and she just really didn't want to get back together before we left for home. So you may actually find you wish you could spend more time with her.
Right.
It's all very, you know, moving through it step by step, moment by moment, not necessarily getting fixed in your mind right now, oh, I have to adopt from California or I have to adopt from Florida because I know people there that I can go stay with for free. You know, be open to the possibilities. And I'm always amazed. I remember there are a few states that we know are a little bit more expensive lodging-wise and legal-wise. And there was, I remember one family when I first started, they were a little stressed, just how they would stretch their budget. And they were presented with a birth mother in a more expensive state. And they thought, but we're going to keep moving forward. We'll get it together. And then they didn't even realize that they had extended family there, but when they started telling their parents, hey, we're going to, I forget exactly where it was, I think it was in the Northeast, then they found out, oh, you know, we have cousins up there. And so then suddenly they kind of reunited with family, and then they were able to stay with people. So you never know what might come up, but just to be open to the flexibility, to the possibilities, but also communicating with us, because another side of this is if you are finding that you're stressed because of the time or the resources necessary to pursue a certain match, we might be able to tell you if something is reasonable or if it's out of the usual or how to get more out of the opportunity and make the most of it and maximize your time and your resources too. So that's really, and for those of you who are already working with Lifetime, I mean, you know that we emphasize contact with us. We want you to communicate, especially during your match, especially when your baby's born, so that we can say, you know, that's unusual. Usually families don't have to do that. Or, yeah, that's very common. Actually, that's a really good thing, or that's a really good deal, or, you know, to just help you navigate this. So these are all great questions, and I love these questions because it's not only about how do I start adoption. It's you have a goal at the end of this that's a baby, and I love talking about when the baby's born because it means all of you are really focusing on this is going to happen and what can I expect when this happens, not if this happens, but when this baby comes. So great. I'm so glad these questions have come up. We had another one here talking more about open adoption, Kim. Is it common to meet with the birth mom face-to-face before the birth of the baby? What does that relationship look like after we match?
I don't think so. I don't think it's very common to meet face-to-face or to even know what she looks like before you actually travel to her state at the birth of your child or for the placement, like if it's a baby that's already born. You know, and even then, once you get there, she may not be ready to meet you right then and there. We've heard a few stories where, you know, she wasn't quite ready for that yet, but eventually had said, okay, I'm ready to, you know, see you guys in person. In the meantime, they were able to spend time with their baby, like in the nursery or in another room. But generally during the match process, it's phone calls, emails, texting, something along those lines. So I think all of those methods of communication, they're all helpful because you can certainly send her a text and say, hey, how are you feeling? I was just thinking about you, or, you know, just a quick question, and also make yourself available to her if she has questions for you that pop into her mind that she just feels more comfortable texting you about. I know that we're pretty avid texters with birth moms, because we know that it's a pretty reliable method of communication with birth moms these days. Again, I've also heard of attorneys who say, you know what, I don't text with birth moms. It's just not what I do. And we go, well, you know, I mean, when we text her, she responds right away, but when we leave a message, we don't get a call back. So different people are comfortable with communicating in different ways, personality-wise or just privacy-wise, you know. So that would be the most common thing. And then when you are traveling to be with your child and waiting for clearance, it's normal to meet her face-to-face at that time. And then after the adoption is over, I would say that communication typically falls into place naturally on its own, that if you've had phone calls, emails, or texting with birth mom, it feels natural to still have some of that after the adoption, although just be birth mom led with it so that if she's kind of backing off a little and needing some space, like emotional space, give her that, you know. Try not to drop off the face of the planet yourself as well if you've had a lot of contact, but just be sensitive to how she may be feeling. And then basically you're sending letters and photos to her twice a year and might have an agreement to meet up for lunch or something once a year or maybe twice a year at the most.
We really encourage you to be available to meet her in person if possible and when possible. One thing I always like to add is just when I'm speaking with women who are thinking about adoption, sometimes they will say, can I meet them in person? And I will always say yes. And sometimes I will qualify it a little bit and explain a little bit more if she's very close to her due date. Like tonight, if we get a call from a woman and she says, I'm due next week, can I meet the adoptive parents in person? We might encourage her to video chat with you just because the time period is so short in which to travel and then also be there for the baby's birth. So usually they're very receptive and understanding of that when we can say, you know, given that your due date is next Thursday, you know, and that you live coast to coast, I don't know that they'll be able to get out there before your baby's born, but you can definitely meet with them in the hospital, talk with them separately, or see them with your baby, however you want to spend that time. And usually she's very understanding, but if she calls more on an average type situation and she's got a few months and left until her baby's due date, or even if it was a month and a half, we would encourage you to try and find a way to meet with her if it was possible. Because
if she's requesting it.
Yeah. It not only adds for her, most of the time when adoptive parents make the effort to meet with her in person, that birth mother feels even more assured that you're the ones.
Mm-hmm.
That you're,
you
that
know,
you're the right choice.
I've actually,
and for
I was
you,
thinking,
uh-huh.
I was thinking while you were describing, you know, the timing and everything, I haven't heard any families report bad experiences. I've only heard of positive experiences, how they come away having learned cool things about her, having spent quality time together, having just found out things that they have in common, having just enjoyed the trip so much. Like, I've just heard nothing but positive things from families who have been able to meet ahead of time.
Well, and I just was reminded by one of our other lifetime families here, you know, that you may be even within a reasonable driving distance. And maybe even if you only had a week or just a few weeks, it's possible to say, hey, we'll devote a couple day trips on a Saturday or even take a day off from work on a weekday. And you could even arrange to drive halfway and meet each other or drive all the way to her. There's so many scenarios that could come into play, so many hypothetical just blessings that could come, and it really only benefits the adoption in the long term. Because you can imagine, too, giving birth and then essentially these strangers show up. Sometimes it's a greater peace of mind to this mother to know, oh, I've already met with them in person. I know what to expect. But for those of you who get involved with a last-minute opportunity, you know, don't panic that you didn't have that time before to really get to know each other before you showed up at the hospital, because those birth moms are prepared for that, too. And she may still sort of make up for that lost time once you're there. And on the other side, too, I was going to add, Kim, it's really a benefit to adoptive parents. Sometimes it's hard to imagine, even as much as all of you long to adopt a child, and I would say probably for people who have already adopted, it's easier for them to imagine this, but even birth mother, it can be so different. Sometimes you're never exactly prepared for the type of situation that your child's birth mom is going through. And when you meet her in person, it sort of gives you an even deeper perspective and understanding and compassion for her. Or may add details like I worked with a woman. She was an older birth mom, and she had some life struggles. She'd lived a pretty hard life. She was living in a trailer. She did have a history with drugs, although during this pregnancy she had not used, and wasn't employed, had a very hard time getting on state insurance because she had just moved there, just lots of different things. And sometimes when all of the little bullet points add up, you start thinking, is this for real? Like, how can this all be happening to one person? And then she was talking to us about how she had mold on her ceiling and the landlord wouldn't come fix it, and she couldn't buy groceries because by the time she made it down to the food bank, she had to walk there, and she had very swollen ankles and would just always get there too late to really get anything. Plus, she had two school-age girls. Like, she just had a whole bunch piling up that was causing a lot of stress. Plus, she didn't have access to a phone. So a lot of times we were waiting to hear from her based on if she could get to a neighbor's phone or if someone would lend her a cell phone, and or she'd walk to a payphone. And to add on top of all of that stress that she was going through, she kept telling me, the nurse and the doctor keep saying, I'm not gaining weight, but I can tell you right now, I'm putting on weight. Like, my ankles couldn't be any heavier, and my belly keeps getting bigger. And basically, the doctor was kind of coming down on her, like, you need to take care of yourself. You're not getting bigger. You know, you're going to hurt your baby. And she was saying, but I'm not doing anything wrong. I'm doing the best that I can. Well, She just felt, I'm sure a lot of you could identify with this, but when you know that you're telling the truth and people around you keep telling you you're not, it can make you crazy. It can make you so stressed out and discouraged that you just want to isolate yourself or hide or even hurt yourself. And she was just at her wit's end. The adoptive parents that she chose, they made the trip to go see her. It was a few hours away. And they actually went to a doctor's appointment with her, and the adoptive mom witnessed the nurse falsify a record because this nurse had a prejudice against the patient choosing adoption. It was horrible. Like, I mean, everything went into this. Everything you couldn't imagine kind of went into this match. But the adoptive mom was strong, and she called the nurse out on it, and then she even went to the doctor immediately and said, I just saw your nurse lie, and I know that this woman is gaining weight. She's taking care of herself. We're even sending her food. We've been to her house. You know, we know her situation. She's having to walk here. So the adopted mom went to bat for this birth mom, and it was really the first time that this birth mom ever felt like somebody believed her and somebody actually was standing up for her. And it was just amazing to see the relief come over this woman, knowing, okay, wow, you know, I don't have to scream anymore, and I don't have to go hide under a rock. So meeting your child's birth mom in person could add so much more to the picture to help you trust her more and to help you better understand what she's going through, her needs in this situation. You might even get to meet her family, which is a really cool thing. Or just like her with last story, you might get to meet her family and understand how this birth mother is kind of trapped in the middle of one parent supports me and the other side of my family is, you know, looking down at my decision and the stress that causes with this mother trying to move forward and how to better support her and be there for her. So we just encourage it. And I always like to remind people, you know, Kim and I get asked a lot just day to day when we're just out in general places, you know, what do you do? Where do you work? Or like last week at church, my pastor preached a message on adoption and orphan care. And so afterwards I went up and spoke with a few people just about my experience, and there's always opportunities to talk about it, and people to this day just still have so many misconceptions about what adoption is like in the way that Lifetime sees adoption happening, that you may never know the nurses or the people in a birth mother's life that just could be completely confused about what she's doing, but she still feels right about you, and you making the effort to go get into her situation a little bit will deepen your relationship typically, even if she doesn't want ongoing contact later. She still may want to meet you in person, and you will still benefit from the time you spend together. I always like to think, I mean, what a cool story for your child to just grow up saying, well, you know, I remember meeting your tummy mommy when you were in her and she was out to here and you would kick and kick and kick, you know, and just to have these memories, because that's your child's story. But it is very much, you know, if we don't recommend it or if it's impossible, then, you know, we'll let you know if we don't recommend that. But typically there's little risk involved in going to meet her in person.
And the only thing is that if she's just saying she doesn't want that right now, then I think it's very important to respect that. For example, I mean, while it has many benefits, if you have the opportunity to meet her in person before the birth or before the adoption takes place, while it has many benefits, it's definitely not a requirement or it's not like a requirement an adoptive parent could place on, well, we're only willing to adopt if we can meet her in person beforehand.
Right.
Yeah, that would be pretty limiting, I think.
Yeah. I mean, it's kind of like in the old days, and I mean, Kim and I, we go back about a decade with this, so there's even older days than that, but so much has changed even in our time with Lifetime, but it used to be less common that a birth mom would even email during a match, but things have changed. You know, now we can email from our phones, we can text, we can message on Facebook. There are so many different devices to allow you to communicate in different ways that you just never know what might be right for her. I met with a birth mother recently, and she said, you know, I like to text until I know someone well, and then I figure it's just easier to talk to them because I can just get out what I need to talk about and move on. So you might even find that in the beginning of a relationship, it starts one way, and then it changes a little.
And you know what, it's funny because I've heard adoptive parents say, well, I mean, I don't know how it would feel to text with a birth mom when I don't know her that well. You know, isn't that kind of casual and familiar to be texting someone versus like a phone call? But I think oftentimes it's a generational thing, you know, where the younger ones are like, you know, texting, you know, it's
right.
It's just easier, it's faster, it's convenient, you know, and
although
then
I have
having
to
a
say,
phone call
Kim,
is more
I've been working with a lot of adopted parents who prefer texting too. I know
well,
I've worked on several matches recently where I've been texting with adoptive mom while she's packing and talking with an attorney. I mean, there's so much multitasking that happens these days.
Well, and I don't know if you've noticed, Libby, but the adoptive parents keep getting younger and younger. Like,
well, that's true.
Here we are. You and I are getting older, and they just keep getting younger.
Great. Now they're going to be.
I remember when they were all older than me. Now I'm like older than two of them.
All right, that's a whole other webinar in itself.
That totally is.
So, and okay, this is a great question. How far into the pregnancy do you match? I want to say our stock answer, but lately I've been seeing the benefit of being willing to at least email casually with a birth mother earlier, but typically we'll at least wait until she's solidly in her second trimester before we introduce her to you. Just because so much can change, you know, when her belly starts growing or the morning sickness subsides and just things settle in a little differently, plus the risk of miscarriage is down too. And so most birth mothers, though, they're not actually usually calling until they're more than halfway through their pregnancy to just begin the adoption plan. So typically we say, I would usually tell a birth mom, if you're around 20 weeks along, you're far enough along to match, but it may be that if she called it 16 or 15 or 14 weeks and she was really motivated to get things started, that we might let her know, you know, you can talk with them, maybe email, and then we'll confirm the match the closer you get to 20 weeks. But on average, I would say most women are usually later in their pregnancy, so they can match any time.
I mean, I pretty much, if someone just asked me point blank, you know, what's the time frame lifetime would match someone, I would pretty much say like 16 to 20 weeks, but there are always exceptions, you know, depending on how birth mom feels about it and if
well,
she's really set on a family.
Exactly. I would love to share what I've learned recently working with birth mothers and also working with some pregnancy centers that work one-on-one with women who are thinking about adoption. There are a lot of adoption programs that actually sort of put a potential birth mother through different phases. And so, for instance, she may start out by making a phone call and then they want to meet with her in person and sort of assess her understanding of adoption. And then they might give her some educational materials. And then they might counsel her a bit more or put her through some kind of I don't want to say qualification, but just some sort of process to get that information or make sure that she's fully aware of what's involved. And then she's introduced to families, to adoptive parents. With Lifetime, we sort of do all of that in the first step because what we've found, and we're finding this more and more and more, is that a lot of times these women are not sure what they think about adoption until they see the adoptive family they could do the adoption with. So in our perspective, it makes more sense to include you all as part of the education about adoption, because if she doesn't know you exist, how is she going to imagine her baby with you? How is she going to imagine open adoption with people like you? And so what we've been encouraging more and more is birth mothers to have direct access, and by that I mean getting to the profiles, learning more about the families through their videos and their websites, and even maybe even where she's emailing me and saying, could you ask Joe and Susan, you know, how old their dogs are, because they seem really young, and I remember my grandma had a young lab, and he was super hyper all the time. You know, there may be some kind of question like that that she just wants clarity on before she takes the next step with you. We might reach out to you and say, hey, she had this, there's a woman we're working with, just this starting, could you just answer this question for us? We'll pass the answer along to her. Or if she has completed her paperwork and submitted a proof of pregnancy, we might just say, why don't you ask them yourself and encourage that connection to start. So you just never know, but it's really to your benefit that these birth moms are learning about you first thing, because you may be the center for her. You could be what takes her from thinking about adoption to I'm making an adoption plan. So that said, that's sometimes why we take things a little bit case by case. You know, we might call a family and say, she's a little earlier than usual, but here's why I think it would be beneficial for both of you to talk right now. But like I said earlier, I mean, most birth mothers are understanding to the process. If she calls it 7 weeks along and says, yeah, can I talk to them tonight? I'm gonna educate her about some of the things that may need to happen before she connects one-on-one by phone with a family if she's just found out she's pregnant at 6 or 7 weeks along. Just because we need a little bit more time to set in for her. But since most women are calling later, that usually doesn't come up very much. Does that make sense, Kim?
Absolutely. And I think something that I sometimes mention to adoptive parents is sometimes they don't call right away because they're hoping they're not pregnant, you know. They are sort of like in a denial phase, and as they start to feel the baby moving and, you know, people are starting to ask them questions, well, now they know it's coming to a point to where they need to make plans. Their first trimester flew by so fast, you know, and it's like they're halfway through their second one or all the way into their third one, and they're really realizing how quickly this baby is going to be here, you know. For example, we've had a couple stories where a birth mom, you know, she delivered early. We had the one last week where a birth mom thought she had 4 weeks left and had just matched with a family, and then 4 days later she was in labor. And then last year we had another one where she thought she had a month left to get her plans together, but she went into labor. She had no idea what to do. She even went to a hospital that didn't even have a labor and delivery, and they needed to transfer her to a place that did. That's how unprepared she was. She thought she had more time, you know. And so I think as they start to see, well, I mean, for them, they thought they had more time, but some birth moms feel like, oh, time is passing by so quickly, I need to really just get my plan in place. And I think many of the women that we work with, they really want to get this plan in place, plan the future for their child, you know, because they have no intentions of, after giving birth, having that baby come home with them. They're totally not prepared for that. Right.
Which ties in well with another question, which is, do birth mothers want me to leave the hospital with the baby? And the answer is typically yes. It's I can't even think of an example where that birth mother said, I want to take the baby home and then they can come a couple days later. I know it's happened before, but typically the reason a birth mother is starting to plan for adoption in this way is because she doesn't want to have to get the car seat and the bassinet and the diapers and the bottles and whatever to take care of baby temporarily. She wants to know my baby is bonded right away and going home with the mom and dad I've chosen to give her.
And we had a question come in about toddler adoptions or older babies, you know, someone who's already born, a 5 or 6 month old. From what I've seen over the years, when a birth mom has made her decision, usually those can happen pretty quickly. Remember when we had that family go meet with a birth mom and her mom, and then the birth mom and her mom liked the family so much that they were like, why don't you just take her home with you now? It was a Hispanic baby girl, and they ended up doing all the paperwork and going home with their baby from what they thought was an initial visit. But, you know, if it's one that she's already parenting and she's choosing adoption, there are some serious circumstances most likely involved to where she's not able to provide for this child. You know, if it's come to the point of her choosing adoption, there's usually something pretty serious in her life that is preventing her from being able to just make her decision in a leisurely, you know, at a leisurely pace. She may have a sense of urgency, a very real sense of urgency for this to happen if it's a baby that's already born or toddler or sibling group. Although those aren't very common, I would say about 95 to 97% of our adoptions are a single healthy newborn.
Right.
At the hospital. Yeah.
Although I always love to go back to, there have been a couple times when a birth mother chose a lifetime family to adopt her newborn. And then as she got to know them and saw the commitment and the follow through and the compassion and care that they offered, not only the baby, but her as a person and as a part of their story, she called a week or so or a month or so later and said, can you also adopt my two-year-old?
Mm-hmm.
And that a couple times she has moved forward with what is essentially a sibling adoption, just because she never imagined it could be like what she experienced. And so that's not very common, but there's just all kinds of possibilities. And I like to encourage families to remember just what an influence, what an impact, what a reassurance you truly are to these birth mothers. That it's easy, I think, as adoptive parents to think, well, I need her so much because I want to raise a baby. And I'm just hoping that she sees something in me or in us or in my family that she believes is right for her baby and right for her in the long term. But on the other side is also a woman who is thinking the same things. Oh, man, I really like this couple. I hope they would want to know me, and I hope they would want to adopt my baby. So you may be completely surprised just by the gratitude that your child's birth mom has for you and the appreciation she has for your family and your way of life and everything you're offering her baby, because your heart will be overwhelmed with that same love and gratitude for her, regardless if you agree with her circumstances or if you even have an ongoing relationship based on what she desired. It's just awesome to see. It's awesome to see how both sides come together, and because they have found the right answer in each other. So, and that's why I love that Facebook post today. We had that cute little boy. And I'm hoping to get Steve and Aaron on a webinar soon, because I know they would encourage families to remember that it will happen, especially if you keep persevering and you do everything you can. But I love that they spoke to that. You know, we know that this was the right birth mother and the right baby for our family, and it just took time. It couldn't have gone differently. So these are all great questions, and I feel like it's kind of nice to talk more about the other side instead of how to get ready, but to actually talk about once you are ready and what to expect. So I'm just grateful to all of you for submitting your comments and your questions, too. Awesome. Kim, is there anything you want to add before we wrap up tonight?
I think that, I mean, there were some questions that are very good questions that if we had more time, we would definitely delve into. So if you have a question on your mind that didn't get answered, it doesn't mean that it's not because it wasn't a good question,
right.
Because I didn't see actually any bad questions in here at all. But just send it to us so that we can answer that for you, so you don't go around with a question on your shoulders that we can alleviate for you.
Exactly. And just to remind all of you, if you're already working with a coordinator at Lifetime, just remember to reach out to her, and she can, if she doesn't have the answer to your question, then she can direct you or get the answer for you. But if you're not yet working with someone at Lifetime, feel free to write to us. You can write to adopt@lifetimeadoption.com, or you can call our office, 1-800-923-6784. And we'd love to answer questions for you one-on-one as well. So I look forward to meeting with all of you again soon. And thank you so much for spending time with us tonight. And we hope this was helpful and that you'll look forward to future webinars.
Yes. Thank you all. Thanks for being here. Thank you for all your questions, and I hope you have a good night.
Good night, everyone. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.